It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, a brand new broadcast week begins on the horn. It's a minute past the hour, a minute past 6 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone for those of us listening live, for those who want to just have an archival sense of when it's... Yeah, that. It's a minute past the hour the show's on. It is the 23rd day of July, 2018. It's Moran Monday. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Got that out of the way early. We've got subscribers to thank at the beginning of the program. Thanks going out to Joan in Taliban, Indiana, longtime subscriber and supporter of the program. Thank you going out to our buddy David in Vermont. Thanks very much, David. Thank you as well to our pal Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of, I believe, California, and probably the better for it. Thank you, Felicia. Thanks to Bill in Florida. Thanks very kindly to Michael. Thank you, Michael, of no known address. And thank you to Kenda out in Missouri. Thank you, Kenda, very kindly indeed. Thanks as well to Jamie. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to Earl. And thanks to Ronnie, who started a brand new subscription. New subscriber. Yay, thank you. And more here as we, because the weekend, you know, we got to, the weekends happen when they happen. So thanks very much to Philip. In Maryland. Thank you, Philip. Love to hear from you again sometime. Thank you to Stacy in Pennsylvania. And thank you very kindly to Joyce in Washington. These are our subscribers for the past Saturday, Sunday, and today. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks as well. Thanks as well over the weekend to our pals, to our pal Joy up in Michigan, Joy in Ann Arbor. Thank you, Joy. Thank you very, very much indeed. Had a nice note from Joy with a fun anecdote that I thought I might share because it's so darn good. Joy says, I came across this allegory today and thought of our predicament. It is a predicament. It is a puzzlement. There was a donkey tied to a tree. The devil came and let the donkey loose. The donkey went into a neighboring farmer's barn and started eating everything in its path. The farmer's wife saw what the donkey was doing, picked up a rifle, and shot the donkey. The donkey's owner heard the shot, saw the donkey was not tied, ran to the farmer's barn, saw his donkey had been shot, so he picked up a gun and shot the farmer's wife. The farmer heard the shot, ran to the barn, saw his wife dead, so he picked up a gun and shot the donkey's owner. The donkey owner's children learned of the death of their father, so they burned down the farmer's ranch. The farmer took vengeance and killed all the donkey owner's children. A little later on, at one of those conversations that takes place in the ethereal realm, somebody asked the devil what he did. The devil said, "Nothing. I just let the donkey loose." You know, ass is another word for donkey. And well, I think over the weekend we can safely say that the ass is loose. Maybe it's got something to do with the summer heat. Maybe it's got to do with the spirochetes get to boiling there, sloshing around in what's the thin gray settlings that are left of anything that might have ever resembled Julius Geezer's actual brain. Because remember, it was about this time last year he was threatening nuclear war with North Korea. Well, now he's threatening nuclear war with Iran. That little fucker wants nuclear war so bad he can taste it. "You won't get me. I've got a hardened bunker. We've got a hardened underground bunker where the president gets to stay. Maybe it'll just be Ivanka and me. Wouldn't that be romantic?" I know. I know. Disgusting. Completely, utterly disgusting. But you gotta wonder sometimes. Yeah, I know. Brother Deacon Asa, who keeps track of these things, tells me, we are running hot and true on Alpha as well as Omega, the two streams. That's good. And then notes, "Oh my God, what a toilet bowl of a news day. My hair is on fire." And it's more on Monday, and they pile up something fierce over the course of over the course of a weekend, the Morans do. But it's frustrating when but how do we not? How does he not just rule the news day? But there are some fun Morans to be. To be had. He's apparently pissed off that North Korea is turning out to have, it was a long while back that our buddy Reverbo coined the term, and it has come in ever so handy over the years. Well-chumped. Well-chumped. That's somebody who has not just been conned, not just been had, but has been had in such a way that it rises to an almost artistic level of a con. He hasn't just been made a chump. He's been chumped and very well. And that certainly does seem to apply here. North Korea, well, Donald Trump was well chumped. Among other things, I don't know if you may have caught it, but it's worth catching up on. In the midst of the shootings and one of the things he tweeted about was how the North Koreans were going to return the unaccounted for war dead from that conflict. You might keep it in perspective by recalling what he said about how the parents of the North Korean war dead, who were about 106 years old, had mass amounts of them had come up to him begging him to get their babies returned. Right, because it's just the. He lies. But as of last week, Well, the pledge to immediately return some of those bodies hasn't been fulfilled. The North Koreans haven't done that. The language said it would include the immediate repatriation of those already identified. Oops, sorry, no. No, not in the least. Not happening. But things didn't go well with Mike Pompeo, who graduated first in his class at West Point. You always have to say that about Mike Pompeo, because, you know, because he did. That was the year that West Point was populated entirely by apparent idiots. Paul Cole, who researched POW-MIA issues from the Korean War for decades, also worked at the Pentagon Central Identification Laboratory in Hawaii, said there are no missing Americans who have been already identified by the DPRK to be repatriated. Thus, it was a hollow promise. So it was, you know, it was just more lying, more and more and more lying. Yeah. Oh, by the way, before I jump out into things, I do need to do a bit of an update. Where fundraising stands, with all the things having gone before, you know, we try to do it in such a way that we can end fundraising, in the third week of the month, and that way the subscribers just take care of a week of the fundraising running, and that way we get to do a fundraising free broadcasting through the end of the month, right? Well, counting today and tomorrow, which would leave us 5 days of fundraising free broadcasting, counting today and tomorrow, we have 840 dollars to go to finish fundraising for July. Then, as you know, I was kind of tickled. We got invited to do Netroots Nation, the radio row there. But it's up to us to get there. Yeah, they're not flying in the talent or anything like that. And that opens on August the 1st. I would have to leave here on July the 30th, get down there in enough time to get everything set up and tested and make sure everything worked. Right. And so there's also, and I haven't made much mention of it because, frankly, fundraising has been so glacially slow this month. Today's fundraising goal is actually 640. Tomorrow would make it 840. We had a $440 deficit from last week, which was a deficit from the week before, but our buddy Scott in Sweden, who has for the past couple of years put forward the Beat the Swede Challenge, put a challenge on this year, just as last, and he wanted to, if humanly possible, have a hand in sending the horn to Netroots Nation. Well, thanks to our buddy Glenn, and thanks to Charlene in Rhode Island, and thanks to Chris in Germany, of that challenge that was put forward, we have met $465 of it. That means there's $535 to go there to qualify for the matching challenge. So, all told, if we can pull all that together, then we've got a fighting chance of getting to Netroots Nation. And I think it should be quite interesting. One, it's an election year. Two, there will be a lot of candidates and progressive activists wandering around. Never know who you're going to hear from in that. but I'll do everything in my power to make sure that they're interesting folks. So that's where it stands. If you want to kick in to the Beat the Swede challenge, then say so in the note over at headon.live, the PayPal interface. Just put a note in there, Beat the Swede challenge. We'll add that up. Then the general operating expenses the 840. Well, I've got good news. Courtesy of Bob in Texas, we have a $100 challenge on the table. $100 challenge, dollar for dollar. If we raise $100 this evening, Bob kicks in $100, and that means that the 640 goes back down to 440, and we've got one more day's broadcasting covered. So that's on the table. The Beat the Swede challenge is on the table. And it kind of needs, you know, we need to catch up with the fundraising goals so that I can know whether or not I'm leaving on the 30th. And with any luck at all, we'll have a broadcast on the 31st, and then the 1st and the 2nd and the right. You see how it works. So there it stands. But it's more and Monday. If you want to help out again, run over to the PayPal button at headon.live, and it all that's where the magic takes place. Okay, so I guess that covers all the fundraising issues, and it would be awesome if I didn't have to mention another word about it for the rest of the program, or hey, little horn miracle, for the rest of the week, and we just do it right. But you know. I wish they were covering expenses. They're not. So, you know, there's a car, and you can't fly because there's all the damn broadcast equipment to take, and that's a pain in the ass. And I'm not going to let, you know, the Horns road rig get shipped to Tierra del Fuego and me wind up in New Orleans at Netroots Nation with not so much as a microphone. That would be a problem. So anyway, the hotel, the rental, the fuel, you know, a little bit of kibble here and there. That's the plan. So we'll find out if that's something we want to do. So with that out of the way, now we can get back to the business of Moran Monday. I don't know, shall we start with warlike Morans? Is the rest of the world just punking Donald Trump because they know that he can be tweaked on his little orange head can be tweaked and that he will howl with outrage and then threaten to roast the world? Because it was, you know, it was Sunday Tehran time, when Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said America should know war with Iran is the mother of all wars. But he also, but what doesn't get, and this is kind of interesting, for instance, in the Reuters account that I'm looking at, and maybe this is a Moran thing, in the first paragraph, it reads as follows. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani on Sunday cautioned U.S. President Donald Trump about pursuing hostile policies against Tehran, saying America should know war with Iran is the mother of all wars. But there's an ellipsis between no and war. So Reuters is putting the war stuff out there in the lead paragraph, but they tell us, if you know how to look for this kind of stuff, that that's not exactly what got said because there's an ellipsis, dot, 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 in between no and war. What he actually said, Hassan Rouhani, is as follows. America should know that peace with Iran is the mother of all peace, and war with Iran is the mother of all wars. Now, maybe this is just something with the imagery of that particular region West Central Asia. I mean, remember when Saddam Hussein was gonna, with the mother of all war? Yeah. Maybe it's a mother thing. Don't talk about mama. And it apparently had to do with stuff that the Trump regime is already doing, trying to destabilize the government in Iran. Rouhani also said, "You're not in a position to incite the Iranian nation against Iran's security and interests." But the fact that mother of all peace, which comes before mother of all wars, is being left out of the lead paragraphs of most of the breathless, pearl-clutching, gasping, hand-wringing coverage, kind of tells me something. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm watching the prices go up at the pump. Now, all this saber rattling's always good for ExxonMobil and Royal Dutch Shell and BP and that lot. Oh, yeah. Rouhani also said, "Mr. Trump, don't play with the lion's tail. This would only lead to regret." I read articles earlier today talking about how the Iranian military could certainly never stand up to the vast power and might of the American military complex. Which may have an element of truth to it. But how did that work out back in 2003? Do we somehow negate the grief and the horror and the sadness of 5,000 shattered families because it was only 5,000 families and not 50,000, and we haven't built a wall to them yet in Washington D.C.? Yeah, the vast power and might of the United States military. You couldn't really outright win a war against Iraq. And so even if our technology is better than our technology, well, you know, if you've ever considered it, a person defending their homeland gets a couple of bonus points in that regard. It's harder to be the attacker than the attackee. Because the attackee has something to fight for, namely mama, home, family, home cooking, neighborhoods, friends. And yes, patriotism. Imagine that. Because see, there are people in Iran who would no doubt like to see a change in government. But the minute the bombs start falling and the missiles start landing and the troops start pouring in, a lot of that will disappear in a sense of solidarity against the aggressor, who would incidentally be, you know, us. On the other hand, that line, peace with Iran is the mother of all peace, that bears some delving into. Iran has multiple problems in its own neighborhood. The Saudis hate them. The Pakistanis hate them. The Indians aren't too fond of them. Depending on which Iraqis you're talking to, yeah, no love lost there either. Right? Yeah. And so they're saying that, you know, they could, and among other things, they're trying to keep the so-called Iran deal alive. That Trump is so decidedly against. And so he got up this morning, or yesterday morning, and continued through the day, twooping. You remember what twooping is. That's what Donald Trump does when he gets up early in the morning every morning and shambles and galumphs off to the little president's room and sits there on the throne with his phone and his tiny hands and his tiny thumbs typing furiously away as the spirochetes sing freaking arias in his head. So he started twooping in all caps. And, it never goes well when he does that. And basically he, threatened nuclear war with Iran. That's right. He threatened nuclear war with a country that has no nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. He types with his tiny little thumbs last night in normal capitalization to Iranian President Rouhani. Now, we know that somebody else was actually doing the typing for him, because there's not a prayer that Donald J. Trump could ever... I mean, a million monkeys with infinite monkeys with infinite typewriters, one of them will type the word Rouhani, but he will not be an orange orangutan who does it. So I'd say this is probably a dictated tweet. And the fact that it went into all caps indicates that he was screaming at the person, probably Dan Scavino, doing the typing. Never, ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious. That's the problem with being a person who knows absolutely not a damn thing about history. When you mention likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. Jesus jumping Christ! Alexander the Great and his band of Macedonian barbarians burnt down one of the most beautiful cities in the ancient world in a drunken binge during his invasion of what we know now as Iran, but was known then as Persia. Yes. Was it Susa, I believe? Looted the treasury, got all drunk, burned it down. Probably part of the reason that Alexander died as young as he did is because he'd been drinking at alcoholic levels, problem drinker levels, from about the age of 10. So, Trump doesn't know that. Trump doesn't know anything. Well, he doesn't know anything about anything. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. He's a poster child for the Dunning-Kruger effect. And what is this? We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. I seem to recall as far back as the Carter administration trying to mount a hostage rescue in Iran. We weren't putting up with it then. But everything has to be about him because, of course, he's a mentally ill, narcissistic, probably some phase of dementia, old orangutan. Few through consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. Well, we are coming up on August, aren't we? And there were some people in the fairly recent history who suffered something like that. A lot of innocent civilians, women, children, mothers to be, with precious little fetuses in their tummies, vaporized at places like, well, not places like, vaporized at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So when he says few in history have ever suffered before, I guess he means the other times that the United States launched nuclear weapons at civilian populations. You know, I'm sorry, patriots, but that's what we did. It's not like Hiroshima and Nagasaki were armed camps full of nothing but wild-eyed members of the Imperial Japanese Army. Because that's not what was in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. In point of fact, there really wasn't a lot of we could have nuked Tokyo, except for the fact that we had already so thoroughly firebombed Tokyo that the firebombing of Tokyo, as was the case with the firebombing of Dresden, wound up being as bad or worse than any nuclear blast or atomic blast, as the case was. Fat man, little boy. Because we created what's called a firestorm in Tokyo and left Tokyo little more than ash and cinders. So I don't know if these two are going to bark at each other. I suspect that Hassan Rouhani is probably a considerably more astute politician and student of world affairs than Donald Trump is, even if the guy is a religious maniac, and he kind of at least has to appear to be one in order to be, you know, president of Iran. Kind of like you have to appear to be a religious maniac in order to be the president of the United States. You have to do at least some bowing and scraping toward a deity. We gave up on that whole electing people who don't believe in God to office long about the time the Madison administration came to an end. That, by the way, was rather a long time ago. Abraham Lincoln would show up and sit in a pew there at the Episcopal Church near the White House. They've still got it marked there if you ever bothered to tour the place. But he wasn't a member. And we don't have any evidence of him ever being baptized or a member of any church. And while he would make lip service toward the Almighty, he was an extremely practical and, I think, arguably agnostic man. That's the word we use now, agnostic, not then. And so we have to hope that cooler heads than, and, you know, hope in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first, and that's disturbing enough all by itself. We have to hope that there are people in the government with cooler heads than that of Julius Geezer. Senator Ed Markey tweeted today, Senator Ed Markey, Democrat of Massachusetts, said, for any reason or no reason at all, and he was subtweeting Trump's tweet that I just shared with you with all the caps in it and the shrieking and the screaming. Do you ever wonder what it sounds like when he shrieks and screams? Because I'd like to say I don't, but Jesus Christ. Anyway, so he subtweeted the suffer consequences likes of which, yeah. And Ed Markey said, for any reason or no reason at all, and I think that's the operative phrase there, for no reason at all, Donald Trump could launch a nuclear first strike and no one could stop him. You got that? No one could stop him. That's wrong, said Ed Markey. That's why we must pass H.R. 669 S-200 by Representative Ted Lieu and me, which requires the president to get congressional approval before launching a nuclear first strike. You know, there's a lot of legislation out there. A lot of important legislation. But this one just ran way up on the list for me. Being able to prevent him from roasting the entire planet seems rather existentially significant. So write those numbers down. Maybe, you know, stop telling us how to be activists for legislation, Bob. H.R. 669 S-200. H.R. is the House bill with Representative Lieu. S-200 is the Senate bill introduced concurrently by Senator Markey. I'm looking now to see if I can find the text of the bill. Or at least the bill prevents the president from using the armed forces to conduct a first-use nuclear strike unless such strike is conducted pursuant to a congressional declaration of war expressly authorizing such strike. Well, what a novel idea that is for the Congress to take back their prerogative of declaring wars. They seem to have gotten bored with it after 1945 and decided just to let an imperial president do it instead. But the formal name of the bill, if you want to do some research or you want to use it in your call or anything, Restricting First Use of Nuclear Weapons Act of 2017. Okay, it was introduced, obviously, in 2017. It was, in fact, introduced on January the 24th, 2017, 4 days after he was inaugurated as president and in the midst of his first demented tantrum, in that case being about the size of the crowd attending his inauguration. It is presently referred to the Committee on Foreign Relations, and it needs action. This bill will die in Congress at the end of the 115th Congress, the useless, batshit crazy 115th Congress. So maybe just in terms of thinking about being strategic, Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Let's have a look there. And fine, okay, so the chairman of the committee is Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee. The ranking member on the Democrat side is Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey. After that, you get, on the Republican side, you get James Risch of Idaho, noodle-spined Senator from Florida, Marco Rubio. Ron ain't going to win any IQ contests, Johnson of Wisconsin. And hey, there's rubber-tipped arrow Parthian shot archer, Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona. Cory Gardner of Colorado, who was the recipient of millions of dollars in dirty money from the National Ruble Association is on the committee as well. Senator Todd Young from Talibandiana, with a big old square-jawed grin like clutch cargo of old, he's on the committee. Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming is on the committee. Johnny Isaacson of Georgia, also on the Republican side. Rob Portman of Ohio. And Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky and that thing on his head. On the Democratic side, you've got Cory Booker, you've got Jeff Merkley, Ed Markey, Tim Kaine, Chris Murphy, Tom Udall, Christopher Coons, Gene Shaheen of New Hampshire, Ben Cardin of Maryland, and Bob Menendez, again, the ranking member. So that's where that bill is right now. And that's where you start. If you happen to be in Tennistan, a call to Bob Corker saying, get on this damn bill. This ain't about politics. This is about keeping a madman from roasting the planet. Yeah, get after Bob Corker. I don't know if we still have any members of the Horn Family Community Congregation in Idaho, but get on the phone to James Risch. Our buddy Scary Jerry and others in Florida can ring the phone of Marco Rubio, Scary Jerry, Mark, and a number of folks. We got a lot of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation in Wisconsin who can jingle Ron Johnson. I know we got folks in Arizona who can tell Jeff Flake to screw his courage to the sticking place. We've got community members in Colorado who can ring up Cory Gardner. Jeff in Hellhole, Indiana, can make a well-placed phone call, as can our dear friend Joan in Talibandiana, to Senator Todd Young's office. Wyoming? Do we have any Wyomingians? I don't know. Johnny Isaacson in Georgia. Hey, all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, et al. Maybe you'll be ringing up Johnny Isaacson. And plenty of folks in Ohio to ring up Rob Portman, and no small number of Kentuckians to ring up Rand Paul and that thing on his head. Because if you let's just count ciphering. Not many. It's 3, 5, 7. 9, 11, 13, 15, 17, 19. There are 21 members. We need 11 to vote yes and send that bill to the floor of the Senate for a vote. Then it's on well-known traitor Mitch McConnell as to whether he allows it to come to the floor. But then there's another wrinkle. We actually need, it needs to get to the floor, but we need a veto-proof majority. That means this thing needs to pass by a vote of 67 to something in the Senate. So that when Trump vetoes it and claims it's an infringement upon his powers as a madman, I mean president, the Senate can say, you, and override his veto. To me, this seems a worthy effort. Steve in New York says, first strike legislation. Bob, it's scary as hell that anyone would think that such legislation is even necessary. To bastardize the Chinese proverb, we are living in interesting times. Steve, just as a reminder, that's not a proverb. That's a curse. May you live in interesting times. kind of like the curse I heard about, said to have been Eastern European, heard about in law school, and some old Eastern European curse that went along the lines of, may you be involved in a lawsuit in which you are convinced you are right. Yeah. But that's the Senate side. Now let's have a look at how thoroughly packed the House of Representatives committee is. With maggots and Freedom Caucus maniacs. Once again, it's H.R. 669 when you're calling your member of the House of Representatives, introduced by Ted Lieu. H.R. 669, Restricting First Use of Nuclear Weapons Act of 2017. It was introduced in the House. I'm trying to find what committee it's in. House Foreign Affairs Committee. Why, there we are. That makes sense. So let's find out who's there. This is kind of a little primer on how to work legislation. You start with the... Actually, you can start with the subcommittee, move up to the committee, and then move on to your individual members. And there we go. Members. This will be a larger, well, I'm not sure how much larger. It is run by Representative Ed Royce of California. New York's Democrat Elliot Engel is the ranking member. Here's the rogues gallery of Republicans. Representative Christopher Smith, Representative Ileana Ross-Leighton, Representative Steve Chabot, Representative, oh, there he is, the unindicted, Daryl Issa, Representative Ted Poe, crazier than a sprayed roach, Representative Michael McCall, nuts. Oh, there's Joe Uli Wilson of South Carolina. And look, there's Russia's favorite member of the House of Representatives, Dana Rohrabacher, who got in a screaming fit at the media this weekend. And there he is from Alabama's 5th Congressional District, Representative Mo Brooks, less brains. Tom Marino, Paul Cook, Scott Perry. There's a Lulu, Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin. Lee Zeldin of New York. On the Democrat side, got some decent people to work with. Brad Sherman, Gregory Meeks, Jerry Connolly of Virginia, Ted Deutsch of Florida, Joaquin Castro of Texas, there's Tulsi Gabbard, Ted Lieu. So those are the people. Those are the people. If you happen to live in one of those, and it don't think that there's no point in contacting Republicans. They need to hear it. They need to hear it. So we have a demonstrably insane chief executive who is illegitimately in the office in the first place. And he needs this set of handcuffs put on him. And again, at the risk of don't stop telling us how to prevent nuclear war, Bob, these are calls that are worth making. Flavio up in Wisconsin tells me, we call him Jim Senseless Brainer. That works good for me. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana says, Bob, me and Todd Young's office are on a first-name basis. He knows me as Jeff, and I call him, tell that son of a bitch. Wait a minute. Okay. First cowbell of the evening. First name basis, right. Don in West Tennistan says, I'm on it. Thank you, Don. Thank you. You know, that's... I keep waiting for Corker and Jeff Flake to fit some deeds to their words and bust out of that whole gospel or that whole book of St. James business. You know, faith without works is dead. Haven't seen it yet. Maybe this would be a good place to do that. I mean, is there anybody who isn't a maggot or a member of the Freedom Caucus who thinks it's a good thing to let a maniac loose with the largest nuclear arsenal in the world? And what Ed Markey said is true. For any reason or no reason, he can unleash a nuclear first strike. Any reason or no reason. And this is not one of those places where you trust the military, because the purpose of the military is to say, yes, sir, snap a salute and go and tell some function, tell some underling to tell some, you know, the five-star tells the four-star, tells the three-star, tells the two-star, tells the one-star, tells the bird colonel, tells the lieutenant colonel, tells the major, tells the captain. The captain breaks open the key, sticks the and some E5 or whatever, turns it and the button and gone and, you know, marshmallow planet. So, the Moran has the codes. And no amount of cool water on the back of the neck is going to help this one. Nope. So that seems an appropriate starting place. But there is also more, ever so much more. Media Morans. Let's just transition to a different topic, shall we? Because I saw this early on, and, well, I kind of liked it. Over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, they had a bad day. Or a bad segment. Mm-hmm. This morning, the bookers at Fox and Friends were trying to carry water for the Trump regime by bringing on a Democratic congressional candidate who would say good things about how she supports the ICE thugs. They were trying to get a woman named Ann Kirkpatrick, and they had a, you know, big splashy font there, Dem candidate supports ICE, repeatedly booed. Only they didn't have Ann Kirkpatrick. They had another candidate, a woman by the name of Barbara Letalien. Didn't go so well.
And joining us now, that candidate, the only Democrat on stage to support ICE, Ann Kirkpatrick. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. Tell us why you do support ICE.
Good morning. I'm actually here to speak directly to Donald Trump. I feel that what's happening at the border is wrong. I'm a mother of four, and I believe that separating kids from their parents is illegal and inhumane. I'm actually Barbara Letalien. I'm a state senator representing a large immigrant community and running for Congress in Massachusetts. I keep thinking about what we're putting parents through, imagining how terrifying that must be for those families, imagining how it would feel not knowing if I'd ever see my kids again. We have to stop abducting children and ripping them from their parents' arms, putting kids in cages, making three-year-olds defend themselves in court.
Well, but that practice has stopped at this point, Ms. Kirkpatrick, right?
our political points with your base.
One family's happened.
Wait, they still think it's Ann Kirkpatrick. This is professional broadcasting. No, really. They still think it's Ann Kirkpatrick. Well, that practice has stopped, hasn't it? No. There are still, God only knows how many families that are separated. And then the Fox attack blonde it jumps in. And
at this point, Ms. Kirkpatrick, right?
Our political points with your base.
One families kids have been reunited with their families.
Again, my name is Barbara Letalian, and I refuse to believe that our only options are open borders or traumatized.
Okay.
Who is this? Who is this? And then they cut her off because her message was not the message that state TV wanted to run. See, this is what happens when you're not not an honest broker of information. People make mistakes, and then you have to pretend that they didn't just say what they said. And then they have to just pretend it didn't happen and make her go away. But Barbara Letalian made the best of the time that she had. And a little apparent maggot, Rob Schmidt, all he had was, well, that didn't go as planned. Yeah. And then they blamed her. I guess she used a tire iron or something, Barbara Letalian did. We were told Ann Kirkpatrick was going to be on the show. As you saw, somebody else stepped in front of the camera. We're working to figure out how that happened. It did eventually get squared away. No, she didn't blackjack Ann Kirkpatrick and then stand there in front of that brick wall. No. Fox's bookers reached out to Letalian's staffers they thought that were working for Ann Kirkpatrick. A source with the Letalian campaign said, they reached out to our staff believing they were reaching the Kirkpatrick office due to their own failure of due diligence. Over the process of getting the interview scheduled, they repeatedly showed very little grasp on the facts down to whether or not Ann Kirkpatrick was still in Congress. Fox News is where you go when you want to talk to Donald Trump, and Barbara felt she had an obligation to her constituents to take advantage of that opportunity. But this would not have happened to an actual news station. Fox's lack of attention to the facts normally is a disaster for the country. It just so happened today it was embarrassing for them. This, of course, is not playing well over at the home office of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. So Fox and Friends First executive producer Desiree Dunn issued her own statement. This morning, we invited Congresswoman Ann Kirkpatrick to appear on Fox and Friends First through her press contact on file, Joe Katz, who accepted the invitation on Kirkpatrick's behalf. Katz followed with an email confirming the segment, which also included background information and a campaign logo for Ann Kirkpatrick. During the actual segment, Barbara Letalian appeared on camera instead of Kirkpatrick. Despite speaking to producers prior to the interview, Letalian did not identify herself as anything other than Kirkpatrick until she was live on air, at which point we ended the interview. Well, that's the problem. Joe Katz works for Barbara Letalian now. Think Progress reached out to him, and he said, hey, I showed the exact same commitment to truth and accuracy that Fox News always has. Ooh. Jesus, somebody get the solar cane. That burn's going to last a while. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, it's a busy Moran Monday. We haven't even gotten to the shooting in Toronto or the hostage situation at Trader Joe's in L.A. Wow. And then there's the whole Carter Page thing.
that they say that, that the Trump say is proof that blood. No. He lost what? Well, he lost another couple of spirochetes over that. Congratulations to Judicial Watch and Tom Fulton being successful in getting the Carter Page FISA documents. As usual, they are ridiculously heavily redacted, but confirm with little doubt that the Department of Justice and FBI, justices in quotes, by the way, misled the courts. Witch hunt rigged, a scam. It's looking more and more like Trump campaign for president was illegally being spied upon, surveillance. I guess that's for the maggots who can, read a word that long. For the political game of crooked Hillary Clinton and the DNC, ask her how that worked out. She did better with crazy Bernie. Republicans must get tough now. An illegal scam. It's because scam is capitalized. And then he was still at it last night, so President Obama knew about Russia before the election. Why didn't he do something about it? Why didn't he tell our campaign? Because it's all a big hoax, that's why. And he thought crooked Hillary was going to win. Al Donnie. You, as our buddy Scott in San Diego describes you, you demented circus peanut, you. You orangutan. Barack Obama tried to tell the nation. He tried to get the House and the Senate and the presidency to warn the nation. But of course, traitorous Mitch McConnell, who loves America the way a rattlesnake loves mice, wasn't having any of it. And he said he would throw a patented McConnell tantrum if Barack Obama released a statement about the Russians attacking our electoral integrity. And, well, those tantrums aren't pleasant. Reductio ad absurdum is the subject line from Darlene in Connecticut. Reductio ad absurdum, but maybe not, retired Intel chief's security clearances. This goes to another tantrum that the orangutan is having now. Maggots are screaming for the security clearance of John Brennan to be pulled, because he's saying not nice things about Donald Trump on the TV machine. Darlene writes, So the Orange Cheeto also test-flighted the idea today at the behest of Super Prick and frequent Moran Monday Moran, Rand Paul, and that thing in his head, who apparently hasn't gotten enough attention of late, of revoking the security clearances of a slew of retired Intel chiefs. Clapper, Brennan, Hayden, Rice, McCabe, per his attorney, the security clearance was revoked due to his firing. Comey, probably revoked due to his firing. He forgot Janet Napolitano. Lucky her. Per Sarah Sanders, they politicized and in some cases monetized their public service. Never mind the fact they're no longer in public service, and never mind the fact that Donald Trump is monetizing his public service with every second that ticks along on the clock. Trump Hotel. Trump Group. But there's one pretty significant person missing from the list, at least for the moment. A former Intel chief whose security clearance is most likely still in effect and as pure as solid gold. Robert Swan Mueller III. A pretext? A shot across the bow to Mueller? It begs many questions. If Mueller's security clearance is revoked, would or could that impact his role as special counsel in any way? If revoked, what agency or government official is in a position to reinstate it? Could Geezer Disgustus prevent a reinstatement? Does it make any real difference? I don't know. In any case, The rat fucking continues. Stay tuned. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, this is pure political retaliation. This is ham-fisted, dictatorial, tyrannical behavior. Not tyrannical behavior like every time that Barack Obama drew a breath, Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity or Limbaugh was there to scream, "Tyranny, my friends, it's tyranny! Give me another one of those fucking pills." No, this is the real kind of tyranny. The one where the vast powers of the state are used to silence criticism of it. And he went after the Steele dossier again, early this morning, twooping again. So we now find out that it was indeed the unverified and fake dirty dossier that was paid for by crooked Hillary Clinton and the DNC, that was knowingly and falsely submitted to FISA, and which was responsible for starting the totally conflicted and discredited Mueller witch hunt. No, it wasn't, you liar. One, the vast majority of the Steele dossier has been verified. Two, it was paid for by a conservative media outlet called the Washington Free Beacon up until Trump more or less secured the nomination, and then it was continued on. But it was all started by a Republican outfit, but he can't admit that. The paranoia is as deep as the Mariana Trench with this guy. And by the way, they decided to surveil Carter Page because it appeared that he was a Russian agent, an asset. And interestingly, in an interview, Carter Page admitted that he was an informal advisor to the Kremlin. Informal, having some conversations with people. I mean, this is really nothing, and just an attempt to distract from the real crimes. Yeah. Nice. And we haven't even scratched the surface of the morons. This is... speaking of Rand Paul, who, as Darlene correctly noted, seems to think he hasn't gotten enough attention of late, he's trying to get some spotlight time because somewhere down the road, Rand Paul is convinced that he will be president of the United States, he and that thing on his head, and he will be comfortably well off. Because he is, after all, the libertarian ophthalmologist. I'm rich. I'm socially secure. I'm comfortably well off. And so he's trying to get people to take him seriously when he says, "I might not just vote for Brett Kavanaugh. I might not. Maybe. You get my good side. No, I'm over here. Lower." Politico writing today, Burgess Everett at Politico, I think there's a little snark in this. Paul is again inviting fellow senators to play the will he or won't he guessing game when it comes to his decision, expressing grave concerns about Kavanaugh's approach to personal privacy while insisting his vote could go either way, depending on what the judge says in the coming weeks and months. Of course, nothing that the judge says to Rand Paul or anybody else matters if Brett Kavanaugh gets up to the Supreme Court. What will matter is the commitments that he made long ago when he became a made man inside the Federalist Society. Rand Paul said, "I am honestly undecided. I'm very concerned about his position on privacy in the Fourth Amendment. This is not a small deal for me. This is a big deal. Pay attention to me. I'm a serious senator. I didn't spend all that time worshiping the Aqua Buddha just for y'all to dismiss me because every time I say I'm going to stand up to Donald Trump, I wind up on my knees again. Come on, guys, please. I got some serious libertarian street cred to polish. Because Rand Paul doesn't give a flying fuck what Brett Kavanaugh does to a woman's right to control the workings of his own body, because, of course, libertarian used to include things like a woman's right to choose, but now, no, the libertarians are just fetus fetishists. So, no, Rand Paul, nobody believes you. Whoever the nominee was, you were going to do for Donald Trump I almost said what Maria Butina did for Trump. No, what Monica did for Bill. Oh, I mentioned Dana Rohrabacher a little bit ago. He did. He got shitty this weekend. He takes a tour of an ICE facility. And his press creep said, yeah, you can ask him anything. So then the press guy asked him about Maria Butina, and Rohrabacher came unglued. Rohrabacher, in fact, looked at the press and said, hey, there's no conditions. You can ask whatever you want. And so a reporter asked him about his 2015 meeting with Maria Butina. And Rohrabacher, Russia's favorite member of Congress, said, I think you should be ashamed of yourself for trying to divert attention onto another. Wait a minute, don't argue with me. Are you up here doing the press conference? So, apparently, it makes him a little nervous-like. And speaking of Maria, wait a minute. You know, I think I need to have a clip of this. And whenever we bring up Maria Butina, we need to just do this. All right, never mind the applause. Get with it, boys. Yeah, it kind of works, doesn't it? Maria Butina has been answering emails for some years now. As far back as 2016, Think Progress sent her a note asking her about her little organization. Numbered questions. Why did you join the NRA, given that you don't live in the USA? 2, why did you start the right to bear arms in Russia, and why is it important? 3, does Alexander Torshin have a formal role with the organization? Do you still work with him at the Bank of Russia, and if so, what is your title? I see that you spoke with President-elect Trump on the campaign trail about Russian sanctions. Have you communicated with the NRA leadership or other American politicians about lifting sanctions on Russian guns or anything else? Does the Right to Bear Arms organization receive any money from the NRA? Does the NRA receive any money from the Right to Bear Arms or its supporters? Some media reports have identified you as a supporter of Vladimir Putin and his United Russia Party. Is this accurate? And finally, why did your organization help pay to host Sheriff David Clarkey in Moscow? Have you brought any other American politicians? Brought, not bought. So she emails back, and this is rich. I am sorry to disappoint you, but there is no international conspiracy at work surrounding organization I founded, the Right to Bear Arms. Right to Bear Arms and your American NRA are completely separate organizations. We have no political or financial ties of any kind. Though we are literally comrades in arms in a shared belief that a right to own a firearm makes people safer. I have never met President-elect Trump, though I did get to ask him a question from the audience in a very large forum in the early days of his campaign. And I deeply resent your slander against Sheriff Clarkey as a bought politician. That's why I highlighted the brought, not bought. They said brought. She read bought. Maybe it was a Freudian slip. My organization helped pay part of expenses of a visiting NRA delegation to my native Russia, something any decent host would do when friends visit. From reading your American press, it appears that the only politicians that have received large sums of money from foreign governments or organizations in exchange for influence were Bill and Hillary Clinton. But in their wisdom, the American people put an end to that. I'm sorry to disappoint you, but there is no international conspiracy at work surrounding organization I founded.
Well, that turned out to be a big old whopping lie now, didn't it?
Yep. And it comes at a perfect ending to the song of the vulgar boatman.
That black staggin not pull frazzleck and roof slackin'.
Vulgar boatman, yes. Jack in Shreveport, subject line, dossier. I saw someone on TV with background in intelligence say that dossiers like the Steele one are only expected to be accurate within some percentage, like 85%, if I recall correctly. So in normal practice, a dossier wouldn't be totally discounted just because some percentage was found to be untrue. As usual, right wing totally misleads. Well, I mean, lying is what they do. It's what they do best. It's about all they do. And the fact of the matter is, these are semi-formal to informal gatherings of basic information upon which further investigations can be based. So there's going to be some chaff among the wheat. But the interesting thing about the Steele dossier is that it's almost all wheat. Very little chaff. Clarence with an email. His real name. Bob, the real name for the congressman from California, Orange County, is no longer Rohrabacher. It is now Rushabacher. Oh, well, yes. Yeah, very good. Very good indeed, Clarence. Meanwhile, what, Bob, from Scott in San Diego, is it your intention to make the heads of the righties all over the known universe explode? Playing Paul? No, that was not Paul Robeson's version of the song of the Russian boatman. Well played. Give yourself a cowbell. I would if I had, but that was not Paul Robeson. That was some Russian guy in a Soviet Red Army uniform. Is there a Paul Robeson version? That would make their heads explode. Maybe with backing vocals by Jane Fonda, and it'd be Mars Attacks all over the country. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yep, it's definitely Moran Monday. No getting around it. And again, because when things don't happen, I have to mention it again in case somebody tuned in late or whatever. We've got $840 to finish fundraising for the month of July. We've got $535 to finish the Beat the Swede Challenge for 2018. And that is all of what that's what's necessary for me to even have a fighting chance to take the horn down to Netroots Nation and sort of check the pulse of what is ostensibly the progressive the progressive core, activist core in the country. So there's a $100 challenge on the table courtesy of Bob in Texas. He'll match it dollar for dollar. Your dollar becomes two, your five, 10, your 10, 20. If we can raise the $100. So that's where it stands. And it would be great if we had some new folks jump in to help. Or folks who haven't in a while. Which part's fucking awesome, Hung Like Jesus? I don't know. But geez, that was awesome. I just saw that a second ago. Okay, so we are at 21 minutes past the hour. And, if you want to engage in some more End Monday conversation, you are more than welcome so to do. And we'll see where the conversation takes us. So let's take a little break. The phone number, of course, 304-574-8178. Toll free from anywhere in the country and anywhere in Mexico and anywhere in Canada. Is 844-843-4676. And we'll see what happens coming back out of the break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Oppenheimer's deadly toy. There is no monopoly of commerce.
I think that's based on a theme by Prokofiev from way, way back in 1985. Sting, having just more or less exited the police and Russians from the Dream of the Blue Turtles. It's a little dated because of the references to Reagan and to the Soviet Union. But it loops back around and becomes prescient in its own right. Because the sentiments remain the same. So, well, that's why. That's why I played it. It is 27 minutes past the hour. We are more or less at the halfway point of the program. Again, trying to meet a $100 challenge courtesy of Bob in Texas. Please don't let Bob down. These challenges go forth in the hopes that people can help others to maximize their own efforts to keep this broadcast effort going. And when challenges go by the boards, it's rough. So let's go over to the phones and check in, and I suspect we've got Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
You suspected right, Uncle Bob.
Oh, well, goody goody.
My timing, by the way, is exquisite today. When you went into the bumper music, which I'll have a comment on in a moment, it gave me just enough time to nuke up a fresh piping hot cup of my El Cheapo instant coffee, take a quick leak, wash my hands, and get back to the phone.
You know, I'm glad the washing your hands. I'm glad the washing your hands part was in there.
Oh yes, that's part of the routine, boys and girls. I didn't do the washing of hands by the typical rule that you've got to do it long enough under pretty hot water, as long as it takes you to sing Happy Birthday. I think that's the rule of thumb and fingers when it comes to hand washing for it to be truly effective. But it was quick. I mean, it was more than you. It took me back to my days in radio when the songs were exceedingly short and you had to encompass a lot of tasks in the space of a typical 45 RPM hit. And lo, we all remember a lot of us remember those days.
Several, yes. And, you know, we got a couple of DJs in the Horn family.
Besides the two of us, who else? Because I used to know, but I've since forgotten what the scene.
As we say here in the hills, you ask me too quick.
Oh, okay.
That's a phrase that doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but we use it a lot around here. You ask me too quick.
I think Larry up in Berkeley had some connection to radio, didn't he? Or unless I'm misremembering. First of all, I don't know why I'm drinking hot coffee. The last time I
in
checked,
a San Diego
a
heat wave.
Ago, oh fuck! It's 89 degrees, and I, you know, when I call, I have to turn off the big fan and turn on the little fan, which is almost pointless. I mean it. The only known advantage to the little fan is it sends dollars to San Diego Gas and Electric. Other than that, it has no function that I'm able to discern.
And you are you an air conditioner free kind of guy, or are you just trying to keep the bill down?
Well, I would have air conditioning, except I'm on what they call this level pay plan with the San Diego Gas and Electric. I've got a built into the wall a circa 1941 gas heater. They call them California heaters, and you light the pilot on that bad boy. You know, when the weather starts to get a little nippy, you know, along about October or November, and rather than getting down onto the floor, you know, almost like you're a mechanic under a car, you know, like your goober at Mayberry Garage getting under that car on that little wheelie deal.
Hey, the goober.
Yeah. If it warms up a little, I don't turn the thing completely off. I just turn the thermostat down, what there is of it, thermostat-wise. And with this level pay plan, it keeps the winter bill nice and even, so there are no surprises in terms of my monthly electric and gas bill. But they say that it becomes less effective or less leveling if you have both heating and air conditioning. And I would rather be warm in the winter and suffer a little in the daytime in the summer for that reason. So that, you know, otherwise I would have an air conditioner and I'd have that bad boy piped up or piped down, cranked up or cranked down, I should say, you know. But it's just one of those things. When it gets to be too much, I'll crawl into the ice cream display at Kroger until they tell me to go away again.
There we go.
Or yeah, Ralph's.
Yeah, just stand there in front
anyway.
Of the, it, right.
Yeah, climb up there in the frozen peas and the succotash and stuff until the manager comes and chases me out again. The last time he said, if this happens one more time, you're banned from the store. So, you know, hopefully they've changed managers by now. But that song put me in mind of something I hadn't thought of for a long time. Back in sixth grade, if you can go with me that far back.
Travel now through the dim mists of time with Scott in San Diego to those thrilling days of yesteryear. Yes.
Let me see. This would have been late 60s, like 66 going into 67, or maybe 65 going into 66 is more likely. The homeroom teacher was not a nun. It was a civilian, Miss Kramer. And one of the subjects that she taught was geography and history. And part of the school year, someone had this nifty idea for students who wanted to do it to subscribe to a long defunct weekly or monthly magazine called Soviet Life. Have you ever heard tell of this thing?
Never in my life, no.
It was basically, you remember Life magazine?
Yes.
It was basically a Soviet version, ripoff, in terms of format and style, of Life magazine. And it was essentially propaganda, because I mean, even back in those days, you know, they weren't giving us the straight dope on life in the Soviet Union, back when it was called the Soviet Union. But it played up the manufacturing advantages of Soviet Russia and, you know, how happy and contented the people were and the beautiful scenery and just any aspect of life that you would find in America's Life magazine, you'd probably see a version of it in Soviet Life magazine. And I wish I had held on to copies of that thing, because it went out of business in the 80s, I guess, during the Reagan administration. But I guess the point of bringing it up and the point of the teacher having us subscribe to it. And as I recall, you had to get permission from your parents, because I'm sure right there, just south of D.C. and the height of the Cold War in the 60s, there probably would have been, you know, at a Catholic school besides, there probably would have been a military or government connected parent or two who would put the kibosh on their kid subscribing to Soviet Life.
I'm guessing.
Sure I'm on a list. I'm on a list at the FBI somewhere. I ought to look into writing and getting my copy of my file. Because not too many years later, in my early teens, I was on a bunch of anti-war organization mail, snail mail, you know, their mailing lists, and went to all kinds of demonstrations and marches and shit. So I know I've got to be on there's a file or a list somewhere with my name on it. Maybe. I don't know. I'm afraid to look. In today's world, who knows what may pop up and grab you from years gone by. But the whole point of remembering it was the notion of, you know, the countries, their leaders are always at one another, but never lose track of the people. And I'm sure under Putin, maybe the mindset of the populace has changed. Hopefully not, but maybe. Because a lot of people are susceptible to what their government says reality is. But there are free thinkers in all societies, so maybe there's hope from that. I don't know. But somehow, something about that song made me think of those long ago days flipping through the pages of Soviet life.
Well, because you hope the right. But in this case, it's, if you were doing a rewrite, it would be, I hope the maggots love their children too.
Yeah. And kind of the way their love seems to be showing up, the mindset of a lot of people of that ilk seems to be typical of your average 2.5-year-old. I don't want to, and you can't make me when it comes to doing right. They just will not get on board with the flow in terms of, you know, the final analysis, we're all in this thing together and we're going to sink or swim together. So to me, it would make perfect sense to all row in the same direction and in unison, if we can, towards some happier shoreline. But that seems like too much right on the minds in the minds of righties all over the place. They're being cantankerous or contrarian just because they can. And then they wonder why things are not actually working for them. Why the prices of the why the farmers have I read 40% less income from their crop due to some of these tariffs. You know, why things supposedly were going to get better, you know, make America great horseshit, why none of that is playing out for them under Trump. And it will dawn on some of them maybe at some point way down the road. But it's just too bad that people are so fucking gullible. It's like having Mr. Haney in the Oval Office for you Green Acres fans out there.
Oh, I think
the truck pulls up on a daily basis, and he gets out, ambles around to the side.
Well, Mr. Douglas, I'm just going to have to leave this cow here because she keeps coming over here anyway. You might as well buy her.
But Haney would forever show up every day on the old Douglas place with some new scheme or scam. And it's like sooner or later, people should be able to catch on. But there must be something in the water. I don't know. It just boggles my little mind. It just does. I'll see if I can. Somewhere around here, I've got a link that has a link to a copy or two, an edition or two of Soviet Life.
Well, Flavio just wrote and said, I remember Soviet Life. University of Wisconsin La Crosse Library subscribed to it back when I was in college, and it's still in print.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in July 1995, the privately owned Vermont company, Russian Information Services, Inc., purchased all rights to Russian Life. Initially published as a monthly, the magazine soon settled into a bi-monthly schedule, RIS has published well over 100 issues of Russian Life since 1995. Today, the magazine's a 64-page color bi-monthly magazine with stories of Russian culture, history, and life.
Well, so it used to be called Soviet Life, and now it's Russian Life.
Well, I guess the Soviet became sort of, not applicable.
Well, that's interesting. I'll have to check that out, as long as it's not hooked up.
James in Illinois, by the way, says, not yet, Scott. MAGA!
And your story about the hastily yanked guest on Fox and Friends this morning.
Is that just beautiful? Yes.
Well, I didn't see it, but from the way you described it and the audio, I got a vivid picture in my head. It made me think of that classic episode of Twilight Zone that featured Little Billy Mummy.
Yes.
As Anthony. And I believe the episode title was It's a Good Life. And he's the little kid with the supernatural powers who can make people disappear into the cornfield.
Out into the cornfield.
Yeah. And I think they included that in the Twilight Zone movie to great effect. The late great actor, character actor, William Shallert, who was Patty Duke's father, was in that thing. And it was a great episode. It was a great movie anyway. what was his name? The guy on the plane in the William Shatner role with the... he was on Third Rock from the Sun. I can't think of his name. But he played the William Shatner role in the movie.
Oh, John Lithgow.
It's the creature out on the wing of the plane. And the poor bastard is having just the nervous breakdown to end all nervous breakdowns. He's sort of like the way America is today under Trump. We're all looking out at the wing of the plane with a look on our faces that is like, holy fucking Christ on a cracker. My God, what's next?
No, you're looking out the plane. Orange? Really? Orange? The gremlin is orange?
Jesus. The only thing keeping me sane, I've been watching the episodes of Last Man on Amazon Prime, and we're up to, I guess, season 4 now, which marked the introduction of the Farkle family, if you remember them. The key to the humor was massive amounts of alliteration. If you've got Amazon Prime, you owe it to yourself to check out these classic episodes of Laugh-In. Brilliant stuff. And some of it holds up pretty well. It really does.
Oh, it changed the names and you're right there.
Yeah. But, God, this heat is relentless. I don't know how the poor cat deals with it, because I'm sitting here in cutoffs and a T-shirt.
Hey, let's not remind people that this is naked radio, okay? It's 81 degrees here in the studio.
Wait, I'm sorry, you cut out there. What was it?
Let's not remind people that this is naked radio. It's 81 degrees here in the studio.
Oh, mercy.
That's why there's no camera.
Well... Did you get Agnes to get a baster, a turkey baster, and come in and baste you every 20 minutes?
I'm trying to avoid getting cooked more, Scott. It's about cooling off, not getting hotter.
Yeah, but wouldn't...
Basting enhances the cooking.
Oh. Well, I'm doing it wrong then.
Yeah, apparently so.
Maybe... I'll tell this little woman, scantily clad woman, to go away and stop doing that, if that's the case. I thought it would help.
I'll see, there you go thinking again.
I'm sitting here in my own juices wondering why it's so damn hot.
Mm-hmm. There, it, yeah.
What I need is a snow cone. Many of life's...
Do y'all not have a little Hawaiian shaved ice trucks on the corners and stuff? Or
I don't see it in trucks. Usually it's a beach thing. You go down to any of the beach communities.
And you're not that far from the... Wait, yeah, that's another timeout, because... Marty wrote a minute ago and said, He said, you know, if I was... I'm pretty sure that's not my line, Scott. But he said, you can't be... Scott can't be that far from the Pacific Ocean. In his place, I'd be wandering the beach, letting the Pacific Ocean to get just below knee height. And then you could get your snow cone.
Well, you know, that's true. It's only like a couple of 20-minute bus rides away. I'm inland, but not that far. Certainly not as far as I used to be back when I first moved here. I live way out in East County, which is like 20 miles inland. Oh, you talk about hot. You get into like El Cajon or Santee or any of those East County communities this time of year. Back then, I did have an air conditioner, and I didn't give a damn what it cost. But I sold the air conditioner, and now I really ought to look at getting a new one. What I really should look at is winning the goddamn lottery for several million dollars. And our problems, and I say our, I use the royal our here, would be substantially cut down. First of all, I would see to it that you would have the studio equipment stuff that is cat-proof and Bob foot-proof. And not, you know, put together with baling wire, spit, and a prayer, okay? So there'd be that. And I'd be living in a place that had actual insulation, okay? And central heating and air, okay? And I can think of a number of fine causes that I would channel a few bucks to. Oh, mercy. I got to start buying my lottos again.
Meet me halfway, said the Almighty. Buy a ticket.
That's right. You can't win if you don't play. Let's see. There's something else I was going to ask you about. Newsworthy and noteworthy. You know, what was it? I know what it was. The private conversation between Putin and Trump. And there were two other people in the room besides Putin and Trump. One was the Russian translator, and one was the U.S. translator. And I believe the U.S. translator's name is Marina Gross, if I'm remembering my research from last week. Marina is a fairly common Russian name for women.
Right.
I'm wondering what we can find out about her background. And there's talk that one of the Senate or House committees is going to try to get her to come and testify as to the contents of the private meeting. So there's that avenue. But what kind of relationship do we have with the Finnish government? Because you've got to know that they must have had some kind of way to determine what was going on in that room. I mean, governments, unless they're laying down on the job, have a long history of knowing about precise knowledge of what goes on within their precinct, whether it's a visiting head of state or just their own citizens or visitors from another country. And I wonder if that might provide an avenue. You know, certainly they must know what was said. Somebody knows. I mean, I would be, in today's world, I would be extremely surprised if someone other than the four people present.
Yeah, but don't they talk at their own peril? Well, no, look, the Russian government has made it clear that they know every word that was said in there because they're talking about the agreements that we reached with them.
Well,
and dipshit Donnie's over there going, what agreements? I didn't make any agreements. There were definitely no agreements.
And I would like to think that even our government, I wouldn't necessarily be NSA, but it would be some branch of government, maybe not even well-known branch of the U.S. government,
Yeah,
has
but
got
but,
to be
but not to be contrary, least, Scott. All of those branches operate under the executive.
I know that, but I'm thinking that there's always going to be patriots, even in a branch of government that's being run by the likes of Trump, and there's just got to be, unless I'm just too optimistic for my own good. Somebody's got to be riding herd, at least informationally, on this guy, and is holding the information toward that day.
Realistically, I think we're hoping without evidence for hope in that regard.
Well, I would hate to think that. I mean, you could be right, but God knows.
Because, see, these freaks have been prattling about a deep state that doesn't exist, and if it, well, do you see what I'm saying? I mean, we're saying that there's some sort of shadow government that operates outside the purview of actual administrative structure.
Well, I'm not thinking of a shadow government. I'm thinking of people in an agency who do their job appropriately, regardless of who heads the executive branch of government.
So what you'd have, I mean, obviously the Secret Service probably had to clear the room, okay, and make sure that it was safe for the president. That's what the Secret Service does.
Yeah, but point of order, is this the same Secret Service that allowed more than a few people access? I mean, one guy with a knife got into the executive mansion not too many years ago. Is this the Secret Service we're talking about?
The same. So what you'd have to have is, like, since it's on foreign soil, you'd have a CIA spook who was squirreled into the Secret Service, who would then go in under the guise of being the Secret Service and plant some sort of a listening device. I mean, I don't know about you, but I saw those pictures of Trump and Putin, and on the little table between their chairs is a little shallow bowl with, like, some I don't know, hydrangea flowers or whatever they were in there, and I'm thinking, speak this, you know Donald Trump, plants like when you talk to them, talk directly to flowers, Donald.
Well, in Reagan's day, the little bowl on the table would have jelly beans in it. And at least one of the jelly beans would have a listening device.
Yeah, right. So, I don't know. I mean, Darlene in Connecticut just wrote in this regard and said, Maddow pointed out that most likely the Russians recorded that private conversation and Trump didn't, so that they could doctor the recording any way they wanted to in order to put the U.S. on the hook for things that Trump may not have even agreed to or promised. We, because she's channeling you, Scott, we're all screwed, Bob. You've started a
and
thing.
By the way, I do not have gimmick infringement rights.
I was going to say, you didn't put forth any proprietary claim on that, so I don't think there's going to be... Yeah.
Deliberately so. The meme, "We're all screwed, Bob," is not copyrighted. It's not protected in any way, and it's designed that way to be used by as many people as we can. Going by the old advertising notion of repetition, 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 and sooner or later it could catch on.
Okay,
you know?
Wait. Okay, so you want to get way the hell out in conspiracy land? Let's try this. So, as has been pointed out by Maddow, it's highly likely that the only people who could have leaked the Michael Cohen tape, or the existence of the Michael Cohen tape talking about Karen McDougal, is the Trump White House, the Trump team. Mueller didn't leak it. Nobody else could have really leaked it. You see what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
So with that being the case, what if that tape leak actually isn't about him and the, you know, the stripper, porn star, hooker, whatever we want to, however we want to refer to her line of work? What if it's about saying, no, see, we tape things too. The Russians may have a tape, but we, you know, we were taping too, without having to say that. Maybe it's time for my nap.
No, because I'm trying to think of what the word is to describe this way of conducting oneself. And it's sort of like the obvious, I mean, it's the opposite of obvious, but not in a nefarious way. It's not even clandestine. Basically, the reason I'm grasping...
Talking about hiding in plain sight?
No, that doesn't quite capture it. But here, I'll describe the dynamic. What I'm thinking of is a mode of behavior and operating that is not readily apparent, but is effective nonetheless. It's like you certainly don't toot your own horn about it, because that would defeat the purpose of doing it the way you're doing it. It's highly effective, and it works.
Oblique? Obtuse?
Oblique might be it. But what I'm saying is, somewhere there is a person in an agency, or maybe people in several agencies, who administration in, administration out, will see to it that things are done correctly and properly and safely, with an eye toward keeping an unshaded track of the straight skinny, so to speak. Does that convey what I mean?
Yeah, I'd say it does.
Go ahead.
You're talking about the civil service, basically. The career types.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In an agency of government, or a branch of an agency of government, who, no matter who's in charge of the executive branch, go quietly about the business of doing their fucking job well and correctly and appropriately.
That's about the size of it, yeah.
With no motive at hand, other than the joy of doing it.
Yeah, but that Scott, realistically, that's the fairy godmother department that makes sure that the Social Security checks and the VA benefits and stuff get out on time. Yeah, that I don't know if that necessarily applies to our intelligence apparatus. Because we've got too much evidence that our intelligence apparatus has been deeply compromised and dysfunctional.
Even in the days of JFK, in the wake of the Bay of Pigs fiasco, when he threatened to bust the CIA up into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds, there were career operatives in the CIA who were not part of the bad guys. And maybe their existence and presence had to do with Kennedy's insights as to who he was dealing with. I mean, there was the readily apparent aspect of what he saw was happening. But at some point, you need confirmation from the inside, and that can only be provided by good guys within and otherwise aspects of a rotten agency. You got to remember, you're dealing with the relentless optimist here. On the one hand, we're all screwed, Bob. But on the other hand, there's certainly a bright silver lining inside of that. But I'm just thinking that If the Russians know, and certainly the government of Finland had some way of knowing what went on in the room, certainly there's got to be somebody on our side. You know, otherwise we are all screwed.
What, maybe MI6 knows, or?
Well, yeah, that's...
The Israelis, hey, the Israelis are good at that shit.
Oh, those people know everything. I mean, come on. Because that's, I mean, that's when the pieces are being moved around the board by a hand that's attached to an unseen arm, which is attached to unseen people. The moves are being made on some basis, and the basis has to be determined by what they know for a fact or suspect pretty accurately is the fuck going on. And I don't think I'm overcomplicating it. It's, you know, while on the one hand with Trump and his minions in Congress, his apologists and his operatives and his enablers are making it appear as if we're fucked up and fucked over and fucked around to a fare-thee-well, okay, to throw a little alliteration of my own here into the mix, you know, there's got to be on our side, in our system, a countering balance or knot of people who are looking out for us and are quiet about it toward that day when they can present the goods.
You say there's got to be, but does there got to be?
Well, I think there does have to be, because there's always been. And as inept a crew as we've got with Trump and company, you know that their house cleaning has not been as effective as they think it is. And actually, they could be leading themselves astray on the basis of people, as I'm describing, making them think they're doing a bang-up job when it comes to house cleaning. It's a self-preservation thing in that case for these operatives. So, yeah, maybe there's got to be is too positive a way and more hopeful than anything, but it's, you know, hope doesn't come out of nowhere. It's got to be based on some past experience, you know. Otherwise, it does become hopeless. I would just be curious. I mean, maybe somebody else has some other reading or insight that backs up my thoughts here. Because you know, it's easy to get caught up in, you know, it's like Hal Holbrook as Deep Throat in All the President's Men said, you know, I forget the exact line, and you can look it up, or maybe somebody will send it to you. In one of the garage conversations with Bob Woodward, Hal Holbrook as Deep Throat said, "You're missing." I think he said the overall. He said, "You're stuck on the overall. You're missing."
You're missing the. Yeah, not the big picture,
yeah,
or something like that.
It's easy to get caught up in what we're seeing on the news, whether it's CBS, NBC, ABC, MSNBC, or Fox. Okay, because that's not their job. Entertain. And to sell commercial spots as a result of high ratings, you know, for as high a price as they can get, okay? It's easily to get caught up and misled by that circus, okay? What I'm saying is there is a universe of information which occurs outside of that realm, and it is in that universe of information and data professional ability that we're going to find some of these answers if we're wise enough to look for them and make them available. Because, yeah, if all the world truly was, in terms of the current state of things, is what we see on CBS, NBC, ABC, MSNBC, and Fox News and Sinclair, then we're really in trouble. And I'm saying that there's something other than that going on that maybe one in a thousand is just barely aware of. Because otherwise everything crumbles.
That may be where we are. See, you, Scott, have to take the position that there's got to be something. There's got to be something under there, and I'm not making light of it. Okay. I, on the other hand, am coming from the position that, look, the framers of the Constitution did everything they could to make everything as clear as they could, and yet have a document that was not so rigid that it couldn't keep up with a changing, growing nation. And, you know, think of it, maybe it helps to think of the framers of the Constitution as a little group writing code. And it's the code to an app we're going to call government. And it turns out that the more you use apps, the more you'll find out that there are bugs. Well, they found out early on that they had a bug in the code where they had said that whoever came in first would be president and whoever came in second would be vice president.
Mm-hmm.
They remedied that on the double quick, because that was just turned into a recipe for disaster in the early animosity between the Federalists and the Jeffersonian Republicans. But that bug divulged itself pretty quickly. But over time, we've learned that there were other bugs that were not so obvious. For instance, in 2000, we were reminded from the 19th century that there was a bug called the Electoral College. And as I noted the other night, we did nothing about it for 16 years. And then the bug appeared again and did its damage. I'm suggesting that there's a bug there's a flaw in the code whereby the framers never imagined that an entire political party would be co-opted by a traitor and turn traitor with him, and that the country would be left at the mercy of the traitors. They didn't imagine that a group of traitors that comprised less than a majority could accomplish this. But it's happened. And the problem with and I'm certainly no code writer. The more technical members of the community could probably address this better than I by far. But the problem with getting a bug in your code is that code will not write it. Code will not correct itself. It has to be corrected. And at present, we have no means of excising the bug in the code.
Well, I do. That's actually a brilliant analogy. That is, I see no flaw with that. The only question I have is that the bug has infected the entire government. And that leads me back around to what I was saying before. And I'll give the example of music, particularly jazz. There's what's going on with the beats, the four beats, let's say, okay? But especially in jazz, there's what's going on between the beats.
The silence is the music, too, yeah.
Exactly. And I guess what I'm talking about are those people and professionals and operatives in the silence. between the beats doing their job professionally and appropriately toward the end of preserving us. Maybe not rescuing us right away.
But you have to have orders to do these things, Scott.
Because if
you don't have orders, then it's the deep state sham that they're complaining about existing in the first place.
Yeah, but see, deep state, I don't buy into that notion, and I don't think what I'm describing is part of that bullshit deep state conversation. What I'm talking about are people, human beings, who love one another and love the country and love our system of government, bug and all, who know better than to stray out of the beam. Okay, and by the beam, I mean the mandate that we have as good Americans, proud and true, and being drawn laser-like and focused laser-like toward the end of creating a nation and preserving a nation, preserving a union, as Lincoln used to talk about, you know, who are driven by the better angels of their nature, so to speak. And orders don't come into play in that realm of being. Orders be damned is the order that they follow. And the only people who can do that with authenticity and good results are people who have that laser-like focus to our highest best.
Well, theoretically, you're describing somebody like Robert Mueller. You know,
like who?
Robert Mueller. You're a squared-away, button-down Marine. Yeah, he's a Republican, but he's the kind of Republican that theoretically we can respect. Loves his country, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, in some way he might typify that mindset, but I'm talking about people whose names we may never know. But yeah, go ahead with that.
Well, you've got me thinking of the Robert De Niro character in Brazil.
I've never seen.
Oh,
and
well,
I'm
okay.
Ashamed to say that.
Well, that's not going to work then. I'm just having a hard time conceptualizing that there are independent operators in the government who will just do things on their own initiative because they know it's the right thing to do, like making sure we've got a recording device in Helsinki. They got to get to Helsinki, Scott.
Well, if nothing else, people of this ilk are keeping a very accurate, detailed record of things. That's the job of some of them. The job of others of them is to, if at all possible, get the verbiage of the conversation in Helsinki, the private conversation. And it could well be that it's some other agency of some other country that ends up providing that. It could be the Finns. It could be the British. It could be the French. Hell, it could be anybody. You know, describe to me the character that you're describing in Brazil, because I intend to see that.
Well, it's better if you're going to see it, because it's a surreal and quite mad film.
That's Terry Gilliam's film,
yeah.
From the 90s or 80s.
Yeah,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
From the 80s.
All right, I'll make it a point.
By the way, working with my code analogy, Lee, who mm-hmm. knows a little code, knows a lot of code. Who am I kidding? It's not a bug. It's a feature. The problem with the Electoral College is that the lower population states will not vote to adopt an amendment that ends the Electoral College. The problem with Congress reigning in a bad president is that the power has to go somewhere. It was deemed appropriate to give a check on the executive branch to the legislative branch. To correct a bug, you must try not to introduce another bug. The programmer's question is, what is the mechanism that fixes this bug without moving it elsewhere? And I don't see the bug moving elsewhere if we simply elect the president based upon the popular vote. And I think, like I've said before, I think the compact idea is fine until it gets to the Supreme Court and that gang of purely political thugs up there on the right-wing side says, oh, no, there's nothing about a compact in the Constitution. Originalism says that's unconstitutional. And bang, you're back to the Electoral College. The only way to get rid of the Electoral College is, without sounding enigmatic or zen, to get rid of the Electoral College. And that begins with an acknowledgement of its anachronistic, racist past.
Well, to wind up my portion of the conversation, two things. The Supreme Court, and I'm glad they mentioned the Supreme Court because it bears repeating. Go to Google Senate Judiciary Committee. It'll bring you to a link that has all of the members' names, both Republican and Democratic, on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And it'll take a little effort, but look up all of their emails, whether they're of your party or not, or whether they're your senator or not. Look up all the emails, send a brief note to all of them, thanking them for their service and reminding them not to confirm Brett Kavanaugh. Okay, so there's that. If your two U.S. senators are not on that Senate Judiciary Committee, send that same message to them also, and let them know that you will be voting this November or in some future November election in which they are participating if they're not up in this particular cycle. So do that. Okay, so that's my Supreme Court pitch. Because, yes, we've got to keep that guy off of the Supreme Court. And hopefully there's enough stuff, some of which may come about as a result of the coming forward in the way of witnesses or information, the type of patriotic operatives that I was describing earlier. So keep that in the back of your mind for future reference. And finally, on this notion of there being people with laser-like focus working on behalf of this country, maybe we need to start looking for examples of this in history, in at least the last 100 years or so. And that's the nature of history, as you well know. A lot of this stuff doesn't come out until much, much, much later, after the fact, okay? Hopefully we can see some good evidence of it in the short term. But somewhere in history, there have got to be examples of stuff that is credited to people working along the lines as I've described. And that might be an interesting research project, you know, for somebody who's up to it and up for it. Because you were talking about hopefulness versus evidence-based, and maybe some of the evidence is found in history. And I don't know. I'm not that much of a history buff in the general. My focus on history tends to be a lot more specific than general. And maybe that's something for me to do when it cools down a little bit tonight. Fire up the old Wayback Machine and see what I can see.
Well, a historical perspective is always valuable. No doubt about that.
Yeah, and so much of that you also bring to the program, because you're a generalist in the sense that you know something about everything. And that's the DJ rule. You should be equipped to speak intelligently for 2 minutes on any given topic.
Well, I'd like to think I managed to speak intelligently for 2 minutes out of any given 3 hours, Scott. Yes, thank you for feinting me with damn praise.
No. But I mean, on any given topic, because, you know, sometimes records don't work, they're warped, or carts don't fire, or remotes fall.
And the real genius, and the real geniuses of that were the great old radio play-by-play baseball guys who could do a rain delay.
Oh, yeah. Thinking of Mel Allen and Red Barber and who else of that era?
Well, Dizzy Dean. Joe Nuxall over with the red. Joe Nuxall could just go forever. Telling old baseball stories, and one thing would lead to another, and the rain delays were sometimes more fun than the damn ball games were.
Harry Carey did with that, but he, you know, if all else failed, he'd lead the crowd in a song, you know.
Oh, and by the way, going back to our somebody had to record this, Vin Scully, says Marty, yeah. Brother Deacon Asa says, can't Putin just show up to the meeting wearing a wire? Why does someone have to go in ahead of him and plant a recording device? Ta-da! So there's that.
Well, yeah. And remember, boys and girls, he was a high mucky-muck in the former Soviet KGB. And I say was like it was some distant event, okay? But I wouldn't trust anything that Putin offers in the way of evidence. I'm talking about somebody who's verifiably on our side, either us or somebody who cares about us. And when I say cares about us, I don't mean in a Chinese way, you know, what can we get from them, or a Russian way, how can we take over from them. I'm talking about, you know, just a positive way of approaching it, that I don't want anything from this other than the satisfaction of doing something good.
Well, yeah, you have engendered a further conversation because I got a bunch of phone lines ringing in. So let's see what other people have to add to it. And you
okay,
know,
and I'm glad I did.
Maybe you're right. Maybe there is some sort of a benevolent patriot out there that we can eventually know what. But my God, you know, what if he? Here's the thing,
well,
Scott. Just to wrap up,
okay.
What if he did
okay.
give away the farm, and what if there's a recording of him giving away the farm, and the Congress won't do anything about it?
Well, change the Congress, the members of the Congress.
If you can, and we're talking about needing 70, 80. 85, maybe 90% vote turnout to overcome the gerrymandering in the various House districts.
Well, if we don't change the Congress, and the current and the Congress as currently constituted doesn't do it, the next logical thing is to see what a mess that creates if we don't change the Congress. Either way, there's an outcome that is useful. It's just one is more a little easier on the people, and the other is much less easier on the people in terms of outcomes. I would rather see changing at least the House and maybe the House and the Senate in a few weeks, because that opens opportunities that don't currently exist. But if people are content with the status quo, we'll get what that gets us.
Anyway, you're right.
It's a conversation worth having, and I'm glad to have inspired what I did of it.
Well, I'm glad you did. Scott, go somewhere, and this is not meant euphemistically, be cool.
Be cool, Bob, baby. Be cool.
Be cool, man.
Okay.
Later, Scott. Bye now. It's 25 past the hour. God, it's frustrating to me. Sometimes I feel like we need a six-hour program because there's so much stuff out there on any given night, bizarre stuff. Going back to the business of the that Darlene raised the matter of Trump revoking security clearances. Now, maybe I'm wrong here. This is pure speculation. But how can I put this? Is it possible that former directors of the CIA and so forth, your Brennans and Haydens and whatnot, retain their security clearances because it maintains a certain amount of it imposes a certain amount of decorum upon them? If you take away their security clearance, well, don't they become a little bit more of a free agent? Aren't they actually more dangerous? And then again, Darlene may be right. It all may be a shot across the bow aimed at aimed at somebody like Mueller. Okay. By the way, I have some good news to report. Thank you to Frank and thank you to Henry. We have met $75 of the $100 challenge put on the table by Bob in Texas. There's 33 minutes left in the program and $25 to go. Hopefully the challenge will be met so that it won't be left on the table. Thank you so much, Henry, and thank you so much, Frank, for all the help that you provide in keeping this program on the air. Thank you so very much. So $25 remains. That would take us down to $640 to go to finish fundraising for July. And we'll see, you know, we'll see if we can get the horn down to Netroots Nation to hopefully maybe, you know, grow the community a little bit, bring some more people into the conversation, find some interesting folks to talk to while we're there. Because, we do a pretty good job of that. And God knows, it month in and month out, we run this thing on a shoestring. I saw a link a little bit ago. You will not believe Joel Osteen's yacht. What's a minister of the gospel doing with a yacht? Just asking. Meanwhile, let's do go back to the phones and see how the conversation continues. I think we're going to Florida. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Welcome to Florida.
Hey, thanks, Mark. How you doing?
Good, brother.
How was the You Fly I'll Buy the other night? Good pizza?
Did you say something about pizza?
I said, was it good pizza, or was it
it was a get me down pizza. But we do have a few. We have one place. I like to shop local, like yourself, and I grew to be friends with a lady and her husband, Argentinian girl, who I was a big fan of one of my big heroes was Che Guevara. So we're always Che and hugging each other and. Any case, they lasted about 10 years, and for some reason, they're no longer in business. But we have a brick oven pizza place here that's opened up right across the street from a brand new Catholic high school, and it's a little expensive, but it does rock and roll. But I think I had some get me done pizzas, you know, price money wise deal. But and I did get the milk for Chris when she came up. She that's one reason I married her. She's a bulldog. She does. You know, she looked like when she was having our daughter over at Tripler, Honolulu, there at the Army Hospital. She got into a situation where she said, "Get out of my way!" And she had to get up to go to the bathroom, I suppose it was. But she's in delivery, and she might as well have been Dick Butkus. I mean, I couldn't, Bob. You know, shit. I'm about a foot taller and 100 pounds heavier. I'm like,
wasn't nothing slowing her down or coming close to stopping her. Woman
no,
with
was,
a mission.
Yes, it was very impressive, and I was like, "Damn!" I actually, that's what kind of caught my eye. We met in a nightclub in Miami. I didn't get the GI Bill because I joined the Marine Corps for father's approval, recognition, and survivability, and just a washed up athlete, and with some maturity that I knew needed to be brought up to speed, and so I tackled that. So I knew that would have to put its physical demands on me, and it sure did. But I have no regrets. I'm grateful. After 10 or well, actually, it's been over 20 years, I finally got accepted to the VA because of the demands of privatization. Anybody that makes over $36,000 a year, thanks to George Bush Jr., the fine patriot that he is, you're not really allowed to use it. And I was like, well, what do I got to do? I mean, I did 10 years in the Marine Corps. I volunteered for Desert Storm. They didn't take me then. Then they sent me a letter and said, we do need you. And I was like, well, make up my mind, you know. So, but I wanted to comment on Scott's observation. I think I can't speak for Bob Kincaid, but I think in our hearts, of course, there are people like that any and everywhere in the world and always have been. And I think very small groups of people can make a big difference in all things, good and bad or great and small or whatever you want to call it. But I would share with Scott the short time I spent on embassy duty, the 3.5 years that I was out there. I did witness some things when it comes to security, when it comes to surveillance and things, you know, and it wasn't my job, but you if it was your turn in the barrel, you're going to be doing a security operation. You're going to see things. And so therefore you're granted a clearance. You don't have a need to know, obviously, but and we didn't have to sign a disclaimer at the end of that duty. I ran into a lot of naval people that did submarine work and some other folks. And they do have to sign some things that they will not disclose, and understandably. And I don't make any claims that. I would share with Scott, though, that there are. I don't know what the arrangements were of the discussion. What kind of building within the building? What room within a room? There are temporary see-through boxes that they put human beings in, and so you. You can't place a device in there because it's not placeable. It's a hard polyurethane temporary structure which locks together and seals and has an air system and brightly lit, and it has people guarding it with guns. So I, you know, there's the room is swept before it's swept, and then it's swept, and then it's re-swept, and it's under surveillance, and then, you know, so I don't know to what degree, but I would share. To take Bob's Bob Kincaid's perspective, it's kind of like the good cop, bad cop, and if we could just get rid of the bad cops, you know, and that's kind of a bullshit thing too, you know, because when a cop turns in another cop, you really you're asking to get murdered by fellow cops. I you know that's not nice to say, but if they don't kill you themselves, they can very easily set you up to be killed. And if anybody wants to use a movie reference, you can take a glance at. Not just Serpico. There are many more contemporary circumstances that have occurred. I will also share with Scott that if you look at Daniel Ellsberg with the Pentagon Papers, obviously, and he worked with a small group of people and they got into an area and got some evidence and got it to the Washington Post. So there's a case right there that kind of helped blow a small group of people working out of patriotism, but. You know, I just don't know with today's technology that one man or two men or six men, you know, when you're working in a team of maybe 12 or 22 people, you know, agents are going to see other agents and they're going to say, hey, what are you doing? Or why aren't you doing this? And it's just, and then if a person were to place a device, it has to be transmitted to another location. I know with today's technology, and I'm antiquated with my knowledge of technology, but it has to get sent somewhere else and stored. And there's ways to do that as well. But that also takes time and breaking away from your group. And you're being surveilled by your coworkers. It's very difficult to conduct an act of patriotism. And so I'm not being pessimistic, but I would agree with Bob's thing. There is a couple governmental agencies, which are very rarely discussed. I've not officially been privy to them, Bob, but the National Reconnaissance Organization, which from what I've read, monitors about 800 satellites. There's a couple hundred satellites that are in the system, I suppose, that are super highly classified, even more classified than the other ones. And the sad thing is the Americans, our society, our military-industrial war is for sale complex. We will sell if you've got enough money. Yeah, we'll let you spy on us if you give us enough money. So everything's for sale, and so I don't know. That would be maybe you know, Scott could take a look at that, NRO.org or whatever the damn website is. But, you know, I just don't, I don't know. I don't know what you could do to do any of that, Bob. Am I still with you?
Yeah, you're here.
I'm sorry, Bob. Go ahead.
You're here. No, I've got you. I'm listening.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so, and within practically every U.S. embassy, even the one in Benghazi that was never there, or was there a consulate there, in the port. And Bob, I work with guys that work in the nuclear business, and usually they're Republicans, on union jobs, that still think Benghazi, they killed our soldiers. I'm like, they weren't fucking soldiers, bro. I said I fucking was on embassy duty. They can't even, Americans are so unbreachable. They can't even stop and listen to a guy to say, bro, I'm telling you, don't cross the street here. They can't take in real information from a human being that's actually done the thing and saying, no, that's not how it is, guys. I'm just telling you. I mean, that's like you asking me something on a job that I'm doing right now, and you walk up here fresh, and I'm saying, hey, I would avoid walking over in this particular, you know, do this or do that, and you don't take that advice. I'm like, and, you know, so over time, same when I was a Marine. You know, you can give people information or direction. You're like, hey, I tried to tell the guy, and he's fucking dead. And so you have to learn to deal with that in your heart, because you can't be so overly involved with, you know, everybody's business that, you know, that you can block things from occurring that are catastrophic. And so you just you have to roll with it. And it, you know, it's a tough world. So, but I just get a kick out of that. I'm grateful we have a radio station out of Tampa, 88.5 WMNF, and they have a lot of callers and people that host the show. And they are a peace-based radio show with they have good music. They're progressive-minded radio station. They're quite popular. They had the guy who wrote the book about Benghazi on there, and I was lucky enough to get through to him, and I listened to him for 45 minutes talk. About the circumstance, and I just did basic knowledge of what Mark's experience was in the Marine Corps. Then I took the weight of a loaded Marine Corps helicopter, the time it takes to load it with Marines, the amount of fuel it takes, and the miles per hour it flies, and the distance it would have had to have flown to get there. And I said, that fucking ambassador had been dead for 4 hours by the time they put boots on the ground, so to speak, for all the right wingers.
Right. I mean, there was never any there with Benghazi.
There was no there.
It was manufactured outrage. The same. Correct. The same with every other issue they raised with regard to anybody whose last name was Clinton or associated with the Clinton administration. And, you know, eventually, I forget if it was Trey Gowdy or some other godforsaken bagger at the time, who said, listen, you know, look, we started these hearings, and her poll numbers were great, and we've kept going with these hearings, and her poll numbers keep going down. The only purpose to the Benghazi hearings was to defeat Hillary Clinton.
He said that, huh, Bob?
Yeah.
You know, I watched Channel Surfing, and we got Dish here, and so I caught something on a legitimate channel, and they were showing a thing. Well, actually, shit, I apologize. I still consider it somewhat legitimate, but CNN had that expose on the 2000s, and they showed George Bush in the Rose Garden admitting after they had placed their own weapons guy in there, not Kay, the first person who said that there's no weapons of mass destruction. And so the Bush people did kind of what the Trump people are doing, that old step and fetch it deal. And so they'll go, well, okay, we're going to put our people in there. Let's see how that Daniel Nunez thing comes out. I'm like, he came up with the same conclusion. And Bush admits that in the fucking Rose Garden. I'm like, dude, but see, the blinded by the light right, they don't look for facts. They don't care about facts. I guess they just care about abortion. So I don't know, Bob. I don't know. I just needed to call the show because I heard Scott, and I don't have any. There's nothing classified about what I've shared, but I do know that there's places, and there's ways to make it very difficult to do something. And what I would say is if there was a small act of patriotism, it would take a small team. And when you deal within a team, you're under immediate surveillance by your coworkers who are saying, hey, where's so-and-so? So that gets back to your observation, Bob. It's like you have to be directed. And then if you take it to the other extreme where I was talking about with if you were using satellites to listen, which I guess they have the capacity to do now, you have to have authority that has to be authorized, authenticated, verified, and validated and allowed to occur. And it has to be approved by your commanding officer, whether it's a civilian or military person. And so, yeah, so that kind of blocks something from a high technical aspect. I would say that I did look it up because I think you did mention it yourself, Bob, but there were five countries that had done surveillance were doing some type of surveillance, and they let the Americans know along the sealed dossier. You had the United Kingdom, England, they were the first. The Germans were onto it. Estonia, Poland, and Australia are in on the mix and doing surveillance. So, you know, in that regard, there are people that would be sympathetic to their own freedom and democracy or respect for Western powers, even though Donald Trump doesn't think those are important anymore. So you know, we could get help from somewhere else. I did see on something today, which gets back to your observation, or Scott actually said it himself, but they showed a bomb go off somewhere in Iraq, and it's at the edge, some kind of documentary thing, and it was well done. But they showed actually ISIS had a drone up in the air watching it as it detonated, and that drone was at quite an altitude, and it showed the magnitude of the bomb. And they said it twice in the documentary that it's their footage. Now, how the Americans or how the West got a hold of it, or you know, who sold it to who, or whatever, but. So yes, with time something may come out, but it gets back to your point. You know, the Russians are claiming we have agreements, just like Donald Trump told Kim to admit, even though that was all bullshit and lies. So you know, I don't know. I just don't trust anything that comes from them. And that you know, I don't know what else to say, Bob.
Well, there's the thing is inside the executive branch, Mark. Everybody there now works for Donald J. Trump.
Yes.
I mean, that's a reality. The executive branch controls all the administrative functions of, you know, CIA, Pentagon, the FBI, anything in the DOJ, Department of State, hollowed out though it is. And look, I mean, I make sport of the fact that Mike Pompeo is graduated first in his class at West Point.
Fuck that dumbass.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of dumbasses is West Point turning out? I mean, that's the question. If that guy gets to be first, and you know, also if you're first in your class at West Point, your nose is pretty much permanently tanned brown. Okay.
They have to give it to you just to get you away from them.
I mean, doesn't everybody graduating West Point hate whoever graduates first? Because
I would imagine they've just
been a little lick spittle ass kissing. Oh. You know, it's like it's the functional equivalent of Eddie Haskell. You know what I mean? But
you just. Johnny on the spot. I'll give
but,
it.
But
give
all
it
that off. Having all that having been said, dude, I don't know where that and I'm not making fun of Scott or pissing on his idea, but I don't know where that fairy godmother guy would be, and I don't know how he manages to act unilaterally with nobody. You know, I mean this is.
Yeah.
This is that scene in the first Men in Black movie, which I love, where Tommy Lee Jones is explaining to Will Smith, we're always 30 minutes away from a planetary destruction. There's always an Archelian battle cruiser in orbit around the planet. And the only way that, you know, we can maintain life with some degree of rational, sane existence is to not let anybody know. And that's and maybe I didn't understand Scott correctly, but that's kind of the way it was. That was the vibe I was getting, that that there, you know, that we had some MIBs in there who were just going to make sure that nothing got too far out of hand. But you know the chain, you know the chain of command far better than I do. Yeah. If he says launch the missiles, then nobody gets to tell him fucking no.
And you've said that on other shows. I totally agree, and especially the way he's running his hotel there. So I and of course the military people are like some of the people I see even in my line of work. They think the quicker they jump up and salute the that's the man of the day. That's the employee of the moment. You have that.
Yeah, you're working on that next star, even though you're going to get that star posthumously on a roasted world,
That's correct. Yeah. So I mean,
followed orders to the end, good soldier.
I actually, and it kind of gets back to, with the whole Tea Party movement, and if he, if there is some type of pushback domestically, if in fact there's an impeachment or an indictment or whatever it is, and it, that my ace in the hole, and I could be wrong, would be General Dunford, and I know he catches the Bush administration's attention, he gets some type of promotion there. I haven't studied up on it close enough to really care that deeply, but I just look at the way he kind of carries himself, and the way he's a kind of a humble acting person, and then my time in the Marines, I was really good at trying to read Marines because they all come from almost the exact same spot, and so you're able to see am I dealing with a buddy fucker here, or is this person a stand-up dude, is this guy going to do the job right, should I pull somebody else? And so I think that if there was some type of thing where there's a question that I've gotten, and then it was discussed on the Tom Hartman thing, and we talked, I think maybe the last time we spoke, of the Oath Keepers, and how deep or what percentage,
yeah, who knows,
of penetration, no,
yeah, who knows? I
we
mean,
did not.
We know.
That's correct, right? We don't know. So my ace in the hole would be, and see, a lot of civilians think that Mattis is in the operational chain of command, and actually Mattis is not really operational. Mattis is in charge of the Pentagon, which is more Lockheed Martin.
But Mark, a lot of people, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. A lot of people are out there pinning their hopes on somebody like Mattis. I'm looking at a story saying that I guess Richard Clark, remember Richard Clark, national coordinator for
Syria? Yes.
Yeah.
He just spoke today, didn't he?
He was on CNN. Yeah. And he said that, James Mattis may have to personally intervene to stop Trump from starting a nuclear war. Well, how's that?
He actually said that.
Yeah, okay. How's that work exactly?
Yeah.
I mean, he says, no, Mr. President, don't launch the missiles. And then Trump says, fuck you, I'm the president, I'm launching the missiles. See, this is a real Hobson's choice we're facing here, because on the one hand, the president has that authority because this bill I was talking about at the beginning of the program has not been passed and is nowhere near passage. But on the other hand, if you have a situation in which the chain of command breaks down, then you no longer have civilian control of the military, and oops, you know what I mean? You're living in a constant, perpetual, potential military dictatorship.
Oh well,
that's
right.
Why I describe this whole thing politically as a perfect storm. We are in a situation that the framers of the Constitution, on their wildest, most drunken—they drank a lot—most laudanum-induced hazes, never came up with. And it's up to us to figure out a way out. Yeah. And it seems like every path dead ends. We're in a maze that has an entry and no exit.
And I think if the wheels came off, and which the I was actually kind of concerned even under Bush Jr., where there would be some type of clampdown. I see it more likely with this group. You know, the citizens soldiers would think that was their call to arms. They would, if that's part of your perfect storm, is that's what you're kind of leading to, aren't you? Well, in addition to initiating unnecessary nuclear bombs being fired at someone.
Well, unless the Congress develops an inclination so to do, there's no stopping him. And where launching a nuclear first strike is concerned, there is no stopping him. Because and among other things, I don't see the Republicans saying, "Hey, you do that, we're gonna take 4 years and impeach you after you launch a nuclear first strike, motherfucker."
Yeah, we promise we will.
Yeah.
We promise. It didn't Pompeo. Is that what you call him, Pompeo? Pompeo,
Pompeo, excuse me.
Didn't he gave some kind of provocative thing Sunday in San Diego? Didn't he? Scott should have been there.
Everything, all's well, you know, yada yada. By the way, I just got a note from Pam. Pam says, Thug 45's inner circle is just as nuts as he is. I found no evidence to the contrary. And nor have I. That's why it feels like the kind of magical thinking that people with problems with addiction engage in, you know, that this will all miraculously self-resolve. And it won't. It just won't, Mark. But we're running up against it. I want to try to get one more call in because I've seen
Bob.
A couple more calls. Yep. But it's awful good talking to you, my friend. You stay well.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
Later.
I'm
now.
Listening. Thank you, Bob.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. That's our buddy Mark in Florida. Okay, 8 minutes to go, $25 to go to finish Bob's challenge, Bob in Texas's challenge. That's so tremendous of Bob to have made it. And thanks to Henry and Frank for getting us to the $75 mark. I just hope we can, I just hope we can meet that challenge because it makes a world of difference, even to meet one evening's fundraising goal, because that would get us down to finished with Wednesday and most of Thursday of last week as far as fundraising is concerned. So thank you. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Henry. And thank you, if someone will please kick in that last $25 of Bob's challenge. Apropos of nothing, but just a reminder that there is a world out there beyond Donald Trump. The Greek government has announced that 20 people are dead because of wildfires burning all around the ancient city of Athens in Attica. Just kind of amazing because it reminded me, ancient history, you know. Once upon a time, with an attack looming from Persia, somebody went to the oracle, I think at Delphi, and said, you know, how do we protect Athens? And the Delphic oracle was notorious for giving back enigmatic answers. And the answer came back that it had been declared that the wooden walls of Athens would not fall. Well, that seemed kind of stupid. Yeah, thanks, Zeus. Thanks, Apollo. Yeah, that's real helpful. Because the Persians had the ability to just march right there and set fire to the wooden walls around it. But then somebody realized that we're going to be saved by our navy. And lo and behold, the Greek navy devastated the Persians at the Battle of Salamis. Well, now those wooden walls of Athens are on fire. And if there's any place in Europe that didn't need something like this, poor Greece is that place. But the Spaniards are sending tanker planes to dump water. Other countries are helping out as they possibly can. And I'm sure this has absolutely nothing to do with you know, climate change or anything like that. 56 people, according to the health ministry, have been hospitalized. Boats are delivering people to docks dressed in nothing but swimsuits. And fires are breaking out in northeastern Greece on the southern and on the island of Crete. Gale force winds hampering firefighting efforts. Jesus. 600 firefighters, 300 vehicles involved in fighting the fires. First fire broke out in a pine forest near the seaside settlement of Kineta, 30 miles west of Athens, between the capital and Corinth. God almighty. Wooden walls. Wooden walls. And, so, yeah. Spare a kind thought for the much put upon people of Greece. And by the way, it was 480 BC with the wooden walls business. I didn't get around to mentioning the NRA roulette wheel of death landing in Fallon, Nevada, where a guy walked into a Mormon church and blew away another fella, or what happened in Toronto. It becomes more and more difficult to talk about that issue because nothing ever happens. I mean, you know, maybe the Canadians will do something. We Americans, we ain't gonna. By the way, Ralph says, hey, remember, we're moving toward the end of the month. Please make me contribute $55 for trashing Fitzwalker Stan. The Trash Fitzwalker Stan challenge is on the table for the month of July as well, if we can reach the end of our, if we can reach the fundraising goal. And again, $25 to go to finish Bob's challenge. No, that's too much. We'll have to save that for tomorrow. Oh, by the way, just on the way out the door, yeah. Prosecutors in New York have at least 12 recordings that Michael Cohen made. 12. That via a disclosure in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York. It was a filing by the special master who is determining which materials are protected by attorney-client privilege and which aren't. Former federal judge Barbara Jones said 12 recordings were turned over to prosecutors after claims that they were privileged were dropped, I guess because she found that they weren't. 12. I wonder why the Trump team dropped the challenges. Yeah. Note coming from Robert in Australia. Speaking of global climate change, it's a pleasant 68 degrees Fahrenheit here in Sydney, where it's winter, and it's 72 degrees Fahrenheit at Coal River Mountain, where it's summer. And we've been having this type of weather on and off for weeks. Planet's a little squirreled, I'm afraid. Thanks, everybody, for joining in this evening, joining in the conversation. We will have a rich assortment for Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. We will have, assuming that the $25 challenge, the $25 remaining in the challenge is met, we will have a remaining $640 to go to finish the month of July and maybe get started on the Beat the Swede challenge. Thanks to all of you who share your precious, and I do mean precious, finite time, the most valuable element in the universe, time, finite time, engaged in this conversation. Thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you so much to our subscribers. We always need new subscribers. Just click the little box over at the PayPal link at headon.live. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve from Georgia Stan, and thank you to Sparky. Sparky got his first injection of new knee grease today. I hope that's working out well, Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And by the way, I hope everybody doesn't just shut down during the thank yous, because there's always more information. By the way, tune into C-SPAN tomorrow at roughly 10 a.m. There's going to be a House Natural Resources hearing. And you talk about being brave. The executive director of Cold River Mountain Watch, Vernon Haltom, Air Force veteran, a man who was once in charge of nuclear weapons security at a nuclear base, a nuclear Air Force base, will be testifying before Congress tomorrow as to what coal, and particularly mountaintop removal, does to communities in Appalachia. Given the makeup of the committee, it will very definitely be a case of thou hast prepared a table before me in the presence of mine enemies, and my cup runneth over. I imagine the maggots will be losing their tiny minds. I also imagine it's going to be covered on C-SPAN. So by all means, check it out. When I talk about the people at Cold River Mountain Watch being brave, that's no idle boast. It takes a lot of guts to sit there and talk to a bunch of maggots and supporters of, and bought and paid for operatives of an industry that kills thousands of Appalachians, and speak truth to power. So yeah, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.